Hello and welcome to Geek First SideQuest, your weekly stop for video game news, reviews, and more here on the Geek First Podcast Network. I'm your host, the cleaner Dylan Mussenhive. With me today, a special guest making his third appearance, I believe. Cooper, welcome back to SideQuest. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on again, Dylan. It's good to be back.
Yeah, always fun to have you on. Today we have a lot to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the games we've been playing. We got some stuff in the news section. And then our main topic for today is we're going to be reviewing Serial Cleaners, which is the latest, like, Dylan weirdo indie corner kind of game. I feel like I'm always talking about these indie games that a lot of people either aren't paying attention to or have just never heard of.
Yeah, well, it's really a thing now that there's these games that are so well put together, you know, really solid games that just end up flying under the radar because we're being bombarded by AAA titles every other week. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like the indie space is really where you're carving like very specific niches, you know? And I actually talked about this on episode 11 Out of Mana over the weekend with Muds, where we're just talking about like certain indie games, like Unpacking, we talked about there, where like that is such a specific niche game.
Totally.
That like, yeah, AAA would never be able to get that specific on things because the scope is so much bigger. So the indie space is where you get weird stuff like Serial Cleaners, which we'll talk about later. But to get some other plugs out of the way, make sure to join that Geekverse Discord. That's a good place to be. And Patreon, really good place to be right now because Out of Mana was up there early, and now it's on the free feeds, Out of Mana episode 11. And then next week's episode of SideQuest will be up on Patreon nice and early this week. That's getting recorded on Wednesday, so it'll either go up Wednesday night or Thursday, but that will be a Plague Tale Innocence retrospective. Have you played Plague Tale, Cooper? Have you checked that one out before?
No, it's been on my list though for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to spoil my thoughts, but definitely worth it. Really, really great game. So yeah, we'll get all nitty gritty on that on Wednesday, but you can get that on Wednesday on Patreon. If not, you have to wait until next Tuesday. And then yeah, on the free feeds right now, all the main feeds, it's just a lot of TV shows right now. We got Rings of Power, we got She-Hulk, House of Dragons, Andor now. Are you watching any of those, Coop? You checking out any of those shows?
Yeah, really into the Lord of the Rings series.
Nice.
I know it's a love it or hate it kind of series, but sure. I'm easy to please when it comes to those things. And it's keeping me a lot more engaged than Wheel of Time, which was, you know, Amazon's last foray fantasy. Into high fantasy. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that show is great. So check out those reviews on a weekly basis. And then thank you to Taylor, who does the thumbnails for the show, and Amanda, who does the music. I think that is all the plugs. So let's get right into it and talk about some of the games we've been playing. And I want to throw it over to you first. I know you got a few things on your list here, but let's go through one at a time. I want to hear about these things.
Sure. Yeah. It's been at least a couple weeks now of me going through Nier Replicant, which is the first game in the Nier series prior to Nier Automata, the much more well-known of the two. And I guess I've just recently learned that these games actually built on top of the old Drakengard series from like early 2000s, which I remember seeing on store shelves as a kid, but I never actually picked those games up. And yeah, going through Nier Replicant really has me wishing that I had, because I'm into these kind of like esoteric stories that you have to kind of, you get dropped into this bizarre world and you have to figure out, you know, what the hell is going on as you stitch together pieces. It's got kind of that Dark Souls vibe where you're in such a grandiose world and you're just, you know, one little piece of this big machine that's happening around you or has happened around you. Yeah. So from a storytelling perspective, really into Nier. And definitely would recommend it to people who are into, you know, narrative-driven, story-driven games. The actual gameplay, it's just kind of a conventional action RPG, you know, think like God of War, that kind of thing. However, I think that's, you know, maybe secondary to the world and the story building. So I'm excited to go into Nier Automata after I finish Replicant in the near future, yeah.
So is the... Is it like, because in Nier Automata, it's pretty much like an open world, and there is like these other, like, you know, it load into these smaller level areas. But is that kind of the same thing in Replicant? Like just kind of a generally larger open world that you're going back and forth between? A lot of backtracking in Nier Automata.
Yeah, there is a lot of backtracking, absolutely. And, you know, I usually don't have patience for that, but thank goodness, at least the animations are fairly fast and they give you a very good like run speed to get around places quickly. But a lot of the, you know, quests are even like built around just backtracking. So that's kind of annoying. It's definitely not the worst game for it. And I wouldn't necessarily penalize it for it, but I think that's probably true in both.
Yeah. Yeah. When you get to Automata, let me know, cause I would love to have a deeper discussion, with someone on the podcast about that. Cause I played that back in January, kind of before the, you know, slew of new games came out this year. And yeah, I was just like totally invested in it from start to finish for like a few weeks there and trying out these different endings and stuff, which I don't know. I feel like the term ending is it's almost like a marketing lie or something. It's not really like you're doing separate playthroughs, although you kind of do for one of them. But like, you know, the meme of that game has like 26 different endings.
Right.
That's not really true. So I'm sure it's kind of the same thing for Replicant. But I like the way it's structured because it is weird and it's unlike other things. But yeah, calling them endings is a bit disingenuous.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's kind of tied. Like they, I don't know. I'm curious to know which came first, the idea of this like multiple ending to reach the real ending idea, or, you know, did the story come first or did the idea for the gameplay come first is basically what I'm wondering. And I couldn't say for sure. I want to believe that it's the story, and I haven't finished all of the endings yet. They actually added one in a DLC, or I don't know if it was in a DLC or if it just was included in the re-release, because I'm playing the remastered version.
Like 1.27.
Version 1.2. Yeah, exactly. And this idea of like a loop is really stitched through both the plot and the gameplay. And I think it's eloquent, you know, the way the story is put together. So I'm really enjoying it from that, you know, angle. And I really like those, you know, unique storytelling elements. It gets me hooked just to see where it's going to go, just to try something new and weird. I'm usually into the weirder stories and fiction, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Replicant's definitely on my backlog now after playing Automata. I think I just wanted to give it maybe a year or two before I went back to the well, just because the gameplay, I was like really burnt out on it by the end with, we were kind of talking about this yesterday, which is just like bullet sponging and stuff like that. And I don't know, I just, after a bit, I wasn't totally invested in the gameplay, and these bosses just take forever to kill. And it's like, it's not challenging, but you're just, I don't know if it's supposed to be like an endurance test, but it's just not that,
you know. And what I've found in Replicant, like I tried playing on hard mode and I'm like, no, this is literally just a waste of time. Like it's literally just increasing the 100%. Length of the game for no reasonable benefit to me as the player. So I'm still playing on normal, and it really seems like as you play through, you know, each playthrough you just get stronger and stronger to the point where there's almost no gameplay. Like I'm just running from cutscene to cutscene to like finish the story. So like what took me, you know, 8 hours to get me the first ending, or 10 hours to get the first ending, now I'm on my third or fourth and I'm going to clear it in like under 2 hours, you know? Right. So yeah, there's that. And I think that really helps the game move along and feel like it's paced well, even though you are replaying content. So I wouldn't let that turn someone away.
Yeah, for sure. What else you got on your list here?
So Diablo 2 Resurrected. I know I keep talking about this every time I'm on the podcast. I'm a big, big fan. So they've just dropped a new update that includes kind of additional content. It's some new items that basically allow builds that would have never been top tier to potentially be top tier. It's still early days. This one came out a few days ago, so people are still kind of playing around to see what'll work with it. But when they remastered Diablo 2, they really stayed true to the original balancing of the game. They didn't adjust too much. Then they had one major update to try to bring all builds up to being at least viable. It sort of worked, and you know, it didn't break anything, so people were happy about that. Now this new update is maybe going to be, you know, the ace in the hole to bring that home, but we'll see. we'll see what happens.
So is the, it's really just for builds and things like that? There isn't like new areas and stuff, which I guess if it's Diablo 2 Resurrected, I guess they try not to tack on too much new stuff, right?
They definitely, I mean, I think people would absolutely welcome additional content or an additional act even, but the it doesn't add new content, but it absolutely gives you a reason to play other content. The issue with the game for a lot of people is each build is maybe only viable for running maybe two or three levels in the game, which doesn't, it means you're looping the same level, you know, you're doing the same level maybe 20 times or 30 times in an hour or more. So that can get dull, and it gives you a reason to play other characters. This new update actually makes certain areas, and it changes all the time. Certain areas get, you know, more powerful bosses temporarily. So you're encouraged to go and do those areas, even though you might not be spec'd for it, or maybe it's not the best place traditionally to get loot. There's now additional reason to go and do those because it's called a terror zone. So cycling terror zones for each of the levels, which is cool. Yeah, I think it's a good update. I'm excited to play through it more.
Did any of your classes or main characters get like largely affected, or do you have like some new
I've always
goals
kind of played the meta to an extent, but this absolutely will give me reason to play other builds, and especially fire builds, which historically have been like just kind of bad because there's so many fire immune enemies in the game. Naturally, I mean, it's called Diablo, right? And that's naturally the largest resistance, sure, or what everything's resistant to is fire. So yeah, the fire builds have always kind of sucked, and these new items will allow all elements to be able to break communities. Usually you wouldn't be able to do that, or there's only a few items in the game that can break communities, and there were never any for fire. So this opens up fire builds big time. And I also play a Rift Sin, which uses all elements, and that's a very strange character class. It's maybe one of only three or four builds that use all the elements, so it should have an effect on that, and I'll be playing around with my build for Rifts in because of it.
That's cool. Nice. Next up, you had Overwatch 2, which, you know, isn't technically out yet, but is it that you've been playing some Overwatch 1, or have you played any of the betas for 2, or what's the vibe?
Yeah, I didn't play any of the betas, but all my friends were playing them, so I got a pretty good lowdown, and my friends are, you know, Grandmaster, High Master. Ooh, so they have, you know, nice, a pretty good sense of the game, and I don't think anyone was wild about the betas. I think they were hopeful, and playing through the betas, nobody hated it, but they definitely felt like there were a lot of things that were broken. I know Blizzard in the past, though, has kind of taken this approach of, rather than trying to balance everything perfectly, let's just make everything really overpowered. And then naturally people are going to find what's best or what's strongest. I don't know if that approach always works in a competitive FPS, but I think maybe that's the approach that they're taking with Overwatch 2, because it's really focused around the DPS heroes more. It's removing one of the tanks. So that's right, a big change. Usually it's two tanks, two DPS, two healers. Now it's the one tank, two DPS, two healers. So curious to see for myself what it'll be like. I have a feeling it's going to end up developing a pretty strong meta early on, but they've already, I think somebody was telling me that they're going to have a rotating pool of characters each period. So similar to League of Legends, where in competitive you could only choose from, you know, X number of heroes for a certain week or month or whatever. It's been a long time since I played, but yeah, that was a thing at one point anyhow, so.
Yeah, which I'm curious how that will affect a game like Overwatch, which has a much smaller roster of characters and is, like, largely based around switching characters mid-game to counter other people, and if just most people don't have access to these characters to counter each other with.
Mm-hmm,
like, I'm
totally
really curious how that will affect the meta. Like, I would even imagine, like, just in each of those weeks or months or however often they rotate those characters, that would just largely change like just the meta on the fly, which obviously would not affect I guess even competitive. Like, I wonder if competitive players get like some free pass to get all the characters,
right,
or if they have to grind or spend a bunch of money.
But yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah,
to me there's just so many red flags with Overwatch 2 that
absolutely
I'm not really excited to come back. At some point I will jump in there and check it out, but even when I've revisited Overwatch 1 in the last couple of years, it like was not the same, you know, as
well. And that's just
it. When it first came out, which I mean, one, just like gameplay changes, but also just, you know, I wasn't playing with a bunch of friends, and just the environment, everything around it changed, you know?
Yeah. If you're not playing with your friends, I think it would be a very difficult game to enjoy. I think one of the top upvoted comments on Reddit recently, somebody said, I've never loved and hated a game so much as Overwatch, you know, like, and I think that's so true for most players. And what you said too about how the game was completely different from when you had first played, Overwatch really never stopped balancing, where I think a lot of games, you know, they start finding their groove and, you know, things start falling into place. People go, oh, like things are balanced, you know, to some extent. Overwatch never really had that. I think there was always a complaint about balancing issues, and they were always making massive changes to heroes, reworking heroes. Yeah. I wouldn't hold my breath for having a perfectly balanced day one of Overwatch 2. I wouldn't even hold my breath for a perfectly balanced first year of Overwatch 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very curious to hear about that game, and maybe I'll check it out in October. But
you can play with us sometime.
Kick it down the road. Yeah, I guess it is free to play, right? So I don't got to like buy in to get there in day one.
Yeah. I think they're avoiding a lot of flack with that. I'm sure they're media relations team were raising a flag about trying to charge for Overwatch 2 after all the negative press they've had in recent months and years.
Yeah. And then the last game on your list here is Satisfactory, which you have soon to play here. So have you checked this one out yet or still?
Yeah, no, I haven't played this one yet, but I have purchased it, so I will play it hopefully soon. maybe this weekend. We'll see.
Is that a good Steam Deck game for you?
I'm hoping it would be. Yeah, it's an early access game. And I usually don't buy
early access.
But
I feel like that's been there.
I
for
just
years
pulled it up
years.
Here. You're right, it has. It's been in early access for I believe 2 years now. It looks like the release date was
longer than that, but okay.
Over 2 years, June 8th of 2020. Overall it has overwhelmingly positive reviews recently and all time on Steam. And I was actually, you know, provoked to buy it just because I had read some reviews recently that said that it was looking really good, so figured it was worth a shot. Yeah,
there's a lot of those games. Like I feel like Factorio's in that camp too.
Yes,
I feel like I just have all of them on my wish list, and I don't know what I'm waiting for, but at some point I'll be like, I gotta pick up one of these.
And you know, Factorio's always said they will never put it on sale, so if you're holding your breath for a sale on Factorio, I wouldn't let that stop you. But I also haven't played Factorio. I've thought about it. I've seen gameplay. It looks fun. I think it's a game that I would either let consume my life, or I would play it for an hour and then never play it again. And I'm not really ready to have another game consume my life, so I've held off.
Yeah, that's probably a smart move. I just have a couple games on my list. One, last week we talked about the Deathloop. That Deathloop came to Xbox, and therefore Game Pass, finally, after its year exclusivity over on PlayStation there. And with it came the Golden Loop update, which had a few things in there. Did you ever check out Deathloop, Cooper?
I really wanted to, but I was so busy when it came out, I never did. Mm-hmm. So, and actually, when it launched, it wasn't working on Linux. So that was sad for me, and I just waited and then never bought it. But it does work now, and I still haven't played it. So, what are your thoughts there, Dylan, and now with this new update?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll say that it is like on PC Game Pass now, so I don't know how that works with Linux and Steam Deck and all that, but that's potentially an easier way for you to jump in and check it out. But I mean, Deathloop was my game of the year last year, so I love it very much, and I was excited to get some new content, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it would just come to Xbox without any new stuff, but I've only played a little bit just because I've been busy with other stuff, but I played a couple games, and it's just nice to play it on the Series X, because I was playing on my laptop, which was like, I was on the lowest low settings. My frame rate was really choppy. I was like, I'm not going to wait to play this game. I need to play it right now. But it was definitely not the ideal way to play it. So it's nice. I'm like realizing like how beautiful the game is, you know, like I like the style and I could appreciate it, but I couldn't truly, like, the rocks were just like, no.
Yeah. Texture. Those games are so unforgivable if you don't have decent performance, you know, anytime you're in a first person environment, it's just painful. The choppiness.
Yeah, especially with arcade games, and especially with this one, which has like online competitive play, yeah. right, with there. So that's confusing to it. But I haven't really encountered any new stuff yet, because I think I got to level up a bit more. But what I did check out is that they added an extended ending. So there's kind of two and a half endings in the game, based on how you do things. And they added like another maybe 2 or 3 minutes onto one of the endings, which was the ending that had a lot of question marks around it. It ended in a very like, I don't know if I want to say cliffhangery way, but it's like, oh, you just want more information. And it's like, are they teasing a DLC? Are they teasing a sequel here? What's going on? And truthfully, they didn't really answer any of that with the extended ending, but they gave some more context and some fun scenes of just seeing like essentially the choice you're making and the impact it's having on all the characters in the world. You're getting like a quick vignette of all of them and how they're reacting to it. So I really like it. I think it adds some good flavor to the game and a little more spice to that ending, which was pretty short. It was like, I want to say less than a minute, like that cutscene at the end. But now it's like a good 4 minutes or whatever it is. So I like it. I don't think it's, game changing, or, you know, I already was my game of the year and I loved it so much. So I don't know if it can like get any better. But I think for people now who are playing the game for the first time, who it's going to be a lot of people now that's on Game Pass, they're going to have even a better experience when they finally get to that ending. So I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I wonder if that game, do you see it having a sequel? I know they had a little bit of a rough launch in terms of sales day one.
I thought it did pretty well, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I definitely was like, it's, you know, PS5 only or PC, so it's hard to limit your audience there. So hopefully that, I mean, it being in Game Pass will, you know, I don't know how that works because it's a first-party Xbox studio, but anyway. But yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to do. I feel like a DLC in the traditional sense just doesn't really work, right? If you look at like what they did for Dishonored, that makes sense. They can just add new levels on in like a separate story. Or for something like Prey, which that wouldn't really fit, they made like almost like a Deathloop mini thing, right? They made like a roguelike mode with the mechanics of the game. So my question was like, what do you do with Deathloop? I think it's much more confusing to like actually make a full-on DLC, whereas this is just kind of in the update category, just a couple new things. So I don't know what they'll do. I really hope to see a sequel, but I also don't even know how they would make a sequel. Like, I think it would almost have to be like an anthology, like take that concept, that gameplay idea, and incorporate into a new world, new story, new characters, because I don't really know how you make a continuation of these characters. But I would love to be proven wrong, because I love that world and I love that game so much. So I'm very curious to see what they do with it.
You've sold me. I'll have to pick it up soon.
Yeah, I mean, disclaimer is that I am a huge Arcane fan. Like Dishonored 1 and 2 and Prey are just all three of my very favorite games of all time.
Yeah,
so
I would put Prey pretty high on my list. I mean, I really like the survival horror kind of element of those games. And yeah, Prey just absolutely nailed it for me. And again, another game that really went pretty far out there in terms of narrative right from the first mission.
Yeah, that first reveal is like...
yeah. How's the story in Deathloop? Do you think it unfolds well?
Yeah, I quite like the story. I think there's some twists in there that maybe you could say are iffy, but I think for me what stands out is that there are so many more just memorable characters, and like the writing is so much better, and the game has just like such a specific and amazing style that it works so well. So I would almost say that the overarching story is not as good as a Prey, as a Dishonored, but like the individual characters and like some of the level of detail of these places is like even greater, or like on that par at least.
Awesome.
So yeah, I don't know if you're going in there strictly for the story, I think it might not land the best way. But to me, like, they just took so many of their design sensibilities from like Dishonored games and Prey, which I feel like are games, you know, very like stealthy focused. Of course, you can go loud guns a-blazing, but you can also, they're trying to build it in both ways. You can play a stealthy experience, and I feel like the structure of Deathloop, of just trying again and not losing progress and the inability to save scum and stuff, just makes the like gameplay just flow so much nicer and lets you experiment more and really incentivizes you to use all the tools that you give, that you're, you know, given access to, which I feel like in Dishonored or games like that, you kind of just like get stuck to a couple abilities that you're really familiar with and you really like. Whereas Deathloop's like encouraging you all the time to try stuff, and so successful at that.
Cool.
And then the other game I wanted to shout out is a game called Tinykin. This came out in August. I finally had a chance to check it out in the last couple weeks here. This is an indie game. Don't have the developer's name in front of me, but essentially it is Pikmin. In terms of you are playing this little tiny character in this big world or a regular size world, but you're a tiny character and you're going around picking up these little characters, which I guess those are called Tinykins. I've honestly skipped every piece of dialogue in the game, so I don't know what things are called, but you're picking up these little critters and each of them have like different abilities, you know, based on what color they are. And you're just, it's very much homage to like just those 3D platformer collectathon games of old, you know, Mario 64 and Donkey Kong 64, those kinds of games. So it feels like that, but with just more Pikmin gameplay. And I've not even really played the Pikmin games before, but I've always wanted to. And I just love playing a tiny character in a world with like these larger than life environments. That's like just one of my favorite settings for anything, really. So it's really, really working for me. It's a really, really fun game. Level design's great. Good puzzles. And it's a great just like put on a podcast or like put on a TV show in the background and just like, you know, chill out and vibe with this game. It's really, really nice, positive, fun game.
Yeah, I just pulled it up here. The development team is called Splash Team, which I haven't heard of, but they made it one other game in 2017 called Splasher. So this is really their first, you know, big game of recent memory. And the publisher was Tiny Build, which they've done.
That's a good name for this.
They've done quite a few games. They've published a lot of games, so you've probably heard of some titles by Tiny Build. Yeah, this is interesting. I think it's funny looking at this game being kind of a Pikmin style game. Absolutely, yeah. Especially it launched maybe the same week that they announced Pikmin 4.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, because that was 2 weeks ago. I think this came out in August, so maybe they got like a month jump on there. But I think for anyone who maybe saw that, and it's like, I guess Pikmin 4 is coming out next year, is what they say, but. I think if you're craving that now, it's like this is a good place to go. Plus, it's on Game Pass or even just the game itself. I don't know how much it is, but it's cheaper than like Pikmin 3 Deluxe on the Switch, which, you know, is the port that is still $80. So
I feel like $28.99 Canadian is the standard price. There it looks so really good.
A great cool price game. For at least what I've got so far. And yeah, like I said, it's hard for me to compare too much to Pikmin since I played Pikmin 3 Deluxe like the demo a little bit, so I'm only a little bit familiar. But yeah, the game is just like, it's very silly and it lets you feel very powerful. You kind of have that classic glide mechanic, you know, you have, like a skateboard that's just a bar of soap and you just cruise around the environment super fast. So like the game feel of it is just top notch, which is why just like doing that 3D platform and stuff, just collecting popcorn or whatever is so satisfying because just moving around these environments is so fun, and then the environments themselves are just so playful and silly. So definitely a great pickup for anyone who's looking for something on Game Pass.
The aesthetic of this game is really reminding me of another game that I've had on my list recently to pick up is Cult of the Lamb. Have you tried this one yet?
A review for that one, and
I
love the game. I think it somewhat falls apart in the last like 20% of the game, I would say, like towards the end. But like those first few hours are so, so good that I feel very conflicted on it at the end of the day. But it is a fantastic game. Definitely worth picking up for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Those are the games we've been playing. Let's go ahead and take our first ad break here, and then we'll come back and talk about the news. We are back. I got to admit, it's been a bit of a slow news week, but I pulled a few things here that are interesting to me, and hopefully they're interesting to you, Cooper, and the audience as well. First off, let's go with this. So, strangely, a couple weeks ago, there was the Disney Marvel Games Showcase. They had 20 minutes of Marvel and Disney announcements. And one thing was missing that has since been announced. Don't know why it wasn't there, which is that EA Motive is making an Iron Man game. We don't have many more details than that, but I guess a bit of background on EA Motive. This is the studio that is currently working on the Dead Space remake that's supposed to come out in January, and I believe they said that this Iron Man game is not like even in development yet. It's like they're going into development when Dead Space remake is out, so expect this to be a few years off first of all, and then we can look at their previous games to get a glimpse of what they've worked on, which is Star Wars Battlefront 2, the 2017 one, not the original one, Star Wars Squadrons, and then that Dead Space remake. So not a whole lot under EA Motive. If you wanted to dig deeper and look at the individual like talent of EA Motive, I'm sure you could find a lot of other great stuff. But that's what they've worked on so far. So they've, you know, already done a couple licensed games through Disney, so they got a bit of that partnership there. But yeah, I feel like most Iron Man games, at least in recent years, have been ones that were like tie-ins to movies or things like that. And I remember playing one on the Game Boy Advance, which was just like a 2D platformer. I would assume this would be like a third-person kind of action-adventure open-world sort of game, but we don't know that for sure. But what does the prospect of a AAA Iron Man game do for you in the year of 2022, even though it'll be a good 2024, 25 by the time we see this game, Cooper?
No kidding, yeah. Well, I am not the target audience, I can tell you that.
No.
I'm not a fan of EA games, you know, sue me. Okay. I think I'm in a majority at this point, but yeah, you got to win me over post-release for me to even consider picking up an EA game personally. And I'm also not a Marvel fan. So like some people might buy it just because they want to be Iron Man. And I respect that, but I'm just not that guy.
Yeah, I think, you know, the
sorry to be a downer.
No, I mean, that's totally okay. I mean, we have a lot of Marvel fans in our audience, so they might.
I'm sure, yeah.
No, I mean, it's
ready,
you know,
to pitchforks.
I don't know if anyone's truly super excited for this, because I think everyone has their, you know, skepticism when it comes to EA making a new game. But yeah, I mean, also, we just don't know really anything about this. When it comes to the character itself, I think it's good that they probably won't feel the need to tie it into anything, and they can make their own experience. And I'd be curious what kind of story they go for, the scope of all of it. Maybe it is like a level-based thing and not an open world, although I would expect that's what they want to do. I don't know if I'm super excited for this. Like, I'm a big Marvel fan, but I think there'd be a long list of characters that I'd like to see games of before Iron Man, specifically even in games like Marvel's Avengers or even Ultimate Alliance and stuff. Like, Iron Man's never my go-to character in those games. But I think he works. Like, it just makes sense to have, like, an RPG element to the character where you're upgrading your suits and adding on new abilities and things like that. So there is a lot of potential here. But I guess I did play a little bit of Battlefront 2. I checked it out. And, like, it's a, you know, solid enough game, I suppose. I think people maybe were bigger fans of Battlefront 1 instead of 2. I don't know what the differences were between them. And then I heard a lot of good things about Squadrons, and Dead Space Remake looks really good. So I feel like this, you know, subset of EA, this specific studio, seems like they're in a pretty good spot, even if they are new-ish. So I'm definitely going to keep my eye on this one, but
yeah,
wouldn't say I'm hyped quite yet.
Yeah, no, I think that's wise. It is maybe one of the better track records for an EA studio.
Mm-hmm. Moving along then to a separate Disney property. This isn't really news so much, but I just wanted to bring it up and see what you thought of this. But Disney stated that they kind of have plans to release 2 Star Wars games a year, at least, I guess, is their idea. One being a AAA game, which, I mean, the runway is already set for that, where we have Jedi Fallen Order 2 is announced, and that studio is working on another Star Wars game as well. And then we have Star Wars Eclipse. We got the KOTOR remake. Ubisoft is making an open world Star Wars game. So they're like that, if just those alone, if they're trying to do one AAA game a year, you're already set up for the next 5 years, essentially. But then to me, more interestingly, was that they plan to do one smaller title every year as well, which I don't know if this just means like mobile game, which if that is like, okay, I'm out, don't really care about that. But I would love if they gave the Star Wars IP to, say, like a smaller indie studio, different indie studios, to let them try just smaller niche, more genres within Star Wars games that probably haven't been done before. But I don't know if me and you have ever talked about Star Wars. Are you a Star Wars fan?
More so, yeah, absolutely, okay. I would say. And, you know, I think there is just so much untapped potential in that franchise still when it comes to games. So I guess I'm hopeful. You know, Disney doesn't always inspire confidence in me, but in recent years, the franchise has been going in some different directions, which is positive, I think. And I've always kind of liked that the Star Wars movies, the original ones, they kind of branched off into weird directions sometimes. And even when George Lucas took over, like, it was just different. And I appreciated that, because it doesn't just keep doing the same thing over and over, which, you know, a lot of other fans would hate. But yeah, I'd like to see it continue growing like that. And moving in new directions. So one AAA and one smaller title, I think it's probably a good approach. If they actually follow through on it, would remain to be seen.
Did you play Jedi Fallen Order? Check that one out.
I didn't play Jedi Fallen Order, no. And I think I actually own it, and I just haven't played it.
Yeah, you should check it out. I really liked that one. I mean, it's got Soulsy like combat, so I think for you who's way deeper into that genre on those games, you might find it like not as good, but I think, you know, there is the force powers, or it's just a lot more movement heavy where you got like your double jumps and stuff, so maybe it will intrigue you in that way. I think it's a game that has a ton of issues for sure, but overall I think it's like super solid, and I'm very, very much hopeful for that sequel. I think they'll just hopefully take that foundation and just iron out some of the glitches and bugs and all that, and really just make some cool new levels, because the level design in that game is what stood out to me. It was like really, really cool areas.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I think my Steam Deck, I'm waiting for it to return from Valve. But once it gets back, maybe that'll be
Steam
the first.
Deck?
Nothing. It was just an issue that I had right from day one where my joystick was rubbing against the case ever so slightly. So when you do a full rotation, it kind of feels a little bit gritty. It's not a very nice feeling. And they made it really easy for me to RMA it. From what I hear, it's only like a 4-day turnaround. So I'm on like day two now, and I'm not having withdrawals yet. So fingers crossed it gets here by the end of the week.
Yeah, for anyone who missed our episode talking about the Steam Deck full review, that was a very fun episode, and we got some good feedback on that one. So go back and check that out if you missed it for some reason. Moving along, another game I'm curious. Have you checked out Multiverses at all? Because I think you're a fan of some of these IP that are in here, but I also know that you had a good phase there where you were playing a lot of Melee and stuff like that, and this is a fast-paced platform fighter, so this one's free to play. Have you checked it out at all?
I have not. Yeah, fill me in, please.
Yeah, well, it's I mean, it's pretty much what you'd expect, I guess. It's just a Multiverses of WB's studio, or I guess WB IP platform fighter. But yeah, like very solid movement, very fast pace. Like you got all your dash dancing and wave dashing and all that stuff in there. And like it's a pretty solid game. It's definitely more designed around 2v2 combat. Like there's a lot of team synergy abilities and stuff like that, which is kind of a fun gimmick, but even as a 1v1 kind of game it works well. But the newest character coming out is Rick from Rick and Morty. He comes out tomorrow, actually, so I guess the day this episode drops, which is nice. They've like the game came out in July, and they've already had like 4 new characters, I think. Like they definitely have that pipeline good to go, so it's keeping the game relevant.
Yeah,
I'm excited for Rick specifically because Morty might be my favorite character so far in the game. I really like Morty's moveset, and I really want to do that Rick and Morty team. I don't know if they have a specific synergy together, but that just sounds like so much fun to me. So you got to check it out.
Yeah,
you can pick
up
Rick. I'll be my Morty, and we can.
I'd like to play this with you. Yeah, this sounds hilarious. I'd have a good time with this, even if it was just for one day. I would have a lot of fun just playing these characters. Sweet.
Yeah, there's a lot of like the Looney Tunes characters, a lot of DC stuff's in there. You got Adventure Time and things like that. So it's a fun time, and yeah, I'll be checking out Rick as well. I think maybe one thing for me is like I played the beta, which was earlier this year, and like going from the beta to the full game, I feel like you just get so little coins. So this is a free-to-play game as well, so obviously you gotta like buy characters by earning your in-game coins. And then they have that free rotation as well for this game. But yeah, it just takes forever to get characters these days. So thankfully you can at least test them all before you buy them. You can like go in the lab and like see how they feel, see if you want to buy them. So that's good at least, but it just takes forever to like grind out enough coins to unlock a new character, unfortunately.
Are they trying to build it up as more of just like an arcade style fighter, or is it more angled towards the competitive players?
I think they're trying to do both. Now, in terms of the arcadey stuff, like there aren't any items in there. There's no like single player mode. So if you're comparing it to Smash in that way, like it's going to fall flat. But hopefully, like just if you get together with your friends, whether it's split screen or there's crossplay between all the platforms, which is nice. So everyone can play with everyone. Like that part of it is good. But I don't know if there's enough like weird, gimmicky, crazy stuff that like Smash has that obviously in competitive, we turn all that stuff off. But I don't know if it has enough of that to keep that fan base engaged, but hopefully the IP keeps them engaged. And then they are trying to push it as a competitive game. It was at Evo in the summer, so obviously that's the biggest fighting game stage you can get. I don't know what the tournament scene has been like since then. I actually haven't really heard of any, so I don't know if it was just that Evo.
Flash in the
But
pan.
yeah, I don't know. I hope they do more because I'd be down to check out some more tournaments. But yeah, I think they're trying to do both, and but I also don't feel like they've split themselves too thin trying to do both at this point. So I think they're in a good spot. I'm curious if they will add single player content down the line, or if that's just not really in the cards. It seems to me like they're just trying to buff out that roster in a huge way, which to me is like all good. Like, keep that core gameplay mechanics and just give me tons of fresh new characters from the IP that I'm interested in. I think you got yourself a solid experience there. So yeah, for free to play, you can't go wrong. Check it out. And yeah, I think you'll like it. Like, it's good fast-paced movement. It's not like, if you know, we would play Ultimate and like from our Melee fan friends group, you know, be like, oh, this doesn't feel as good. Like, I think multiverses, you can move around pretty fast, so it feels pretty good now. And it's very intuitive, like much easier. You don't have to L cancel all that stuff like Melee has, of course. So there you go.
Cool.
That's
Yeah,
multiverses.
gotcha.
Last up for the news, this might be a quick hit here. But I thought this was interesting that Video Game Donkey, who is probably the biggest video game reviewer in the world, like, would that be an accurate thing to say, do you think,
I
Duke?
hope he is.
Yeah,
I
he
think
might
it's
be the
wishful
most.
thinking. It's always
I don't
tough
know.
with YouTube, you know, because I really think YouTube skews younger. So do you consider 8-year-olds to be valid audience members? Like, do you count those in your metrics? I think, you know, YouTube
Yeah.
definitely does, and I think that ends up influencing there. Okay, so yeah, sorry.
I
I don't
think
want to hate
so.
on any 8-year-olds listening to the
Yeah.
Geek First podcast. I'm not trying to be that guy, but yeah, okay. I'm digging myself a hole.
Yeah, I mean, I it's a
He's the
different
biggest game reviewer
it's
in
a
the
different
world.
it's a different, you know, kind of review than you're gonna find on like written on Polygon or something. But
Yeah, I love it.
it still is a review, and it's, yeah, he's
He
his
kills me.
style is much different. It's much more just like comedic, but there's, you know, such a truth to the jokes and stuff like that, obviously. So I don't watch a ton of his videos, but he is very funny. But here's what the news part of this actually is that he is launching, or has launched, I'm not sure the distinction there, but his own publishing label under the name of Big Mode, which has like a goofy looking frog character as the logo, said to be focusing on bringing new innovative indie games to the finish line. So I think this is great. Like, I don't see how anyone could possibly think this is a bad thing. That someone who has been very successful and probably has a lot of money is using that to help fund indie games, probably cool, interesting indie games, and bring them to the public if they wouldn't happen otherwise. So I think this is amazing. Good for him. This is really cool. And I think from him, it's probably a great idea that this is like, I don't know if him making YouTube reviews is sustainable for a lifetime, but getting into the publishing business, that seems like a great like career move as well, you know, to do that on the side and build that up so he has another
Yeah.
revenue stream and all that stuff. I don't know what else he does other than reviews. Maybe he already has a ton of revenue streams. Not too sure, but I think this is great news. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, to my knowledge, he's always just been into YouTube. I could be surprised by something else, but I have watched all of his videos. I really mean it when I say I find him
Every
hilarious,
single
and
one.
every single one,
Whoa.
probably twice. I don't even
Holy
go
shit.
on YouTube often. I really don't. But Donkey, I've been subscribed to Donkey for ages, and every time there's a new release, I watch it. And sometimes I would just throw it on shuffle and laugh at the old videos again. Yeah,
Wow.
his humor, it just gets to me. And the big mode thing, I always say that actually when we're playing Overwatch, because I play Ana, and so I say, "Go big mode, go big
Is
mode."
that a saying of his?
It's from one of his videos. He had this
Okay.
video where he one of his friends tells him to go big mode to deal with this scary monster,
Right,
and
okay.
then they all just say go big mode.
Yeah.
It yeah
Cool.
I, it
I didn't know
you had to be there. So I'm all
that.
for this publishing company and all for you know, the new talent. I think breaking into these housed industries, I think in a lot of these companies now, they're really run by people in pa from past generations. There isn't a lot of youth in the top brass of EA or Ubisoft or, you know, what have you.
Right.
So I'm all for new studios cropping up and bringing something different to the market.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see what sorts of games he's getting into. Like, is he getting into like some of those bigger like household name sort of indie games? I feel like he's maybe going to try and find stuff that would go unnoticed. So I don't know how he would do that. But do you expect this to impact his YouTube channel anyway? Like, do you think, like, how much indie game coverage does he do on his channel?
I don't want to go too into the lore of Dunkey, but, you know, to make a long story short, something like a year ago, he posted a video that said, "I'm not making good videos anymore." And I don't think anyone knew if he was being serious. And the video was just like, "I'm done. It's a waste of time. I can make more money by making short, stupid videos." And he's kind of been true to that ever since.
Interesting.
So in a good way, you know, I don't want to say that he's just trying to cash in on his audience, but I think he was making the joke because he knew other people would do it to him if he didn't do it first. I think so much time goes into production for some videos. Yeah. And I think YouTubers can be disheartened when they see the view counts for those so low, and then they make a dumb video, you know, in a few hours, and it ends up tripling those view counts. So that's probably where he was coming from at the time. And he still does deep dive videos here and there, and does review videos as well.
Okay.
But I don't think it's been as frequent ever since. So
interesting.
Yeah, I wouldn't be worried about it impacting his video, I guess, is where I'm going with this, because his videos are all over the place, and they're just kind of spur of the moment. And like that about him.
I don't think there'd be any concern of like him reviewing a game that his company published and then he's like giving a fake review. Like, I just don't see that happening at all. Or even if he did, I could see him doing it in just like a very fourth wall joking way, which would just be like a funny video in and of itself, which, you know, would be probably getting a lot of eyes on that game and be marketing it in a way. So maybe he does something like that, but I don't know. I think I don't really know if I have anything. See anything wrong with that?
If I could see a big press release coming out.
Video, and he's just like, "This game's a 10/10. Buy this game," and like he doesn't mention that he's publishing it as well. Then you're like, "Okay, this is a bit fishy." Yeah. But I don't see that happening.
I could see them dropping a press release that just says, "We are blacklisting Video Game Dunkey YouTube."
Right, that'd be funny. anything else on this? I didn't know you were such a big Dunkey fan. I'm a casual. I've seen like a handful of videos.
Right.
But I watched the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 one in the summer, and that was hilarious. So he's making good stuff over there still.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have too much more to add. I mean, sure. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't like expect the world of Big Mode from day one. And while I'm sure he does have a lot of money, while I'm sure he does have a lot of money, he's not going to have enough to like fund, you know, the scale of games that I think a lot of us are accustomed to. So I'd be hopeful to see something that comes out from a small team of like 3 or 4 people, but going beyond that scale as a single person publishing company would be pretty challenging, I think. Mm-hmm. Even with all that YouTube moolah.
I'm gonna do a very amateur thing. I'm gonna search his name and see net worth.
Yeah,
let's see what we got here. Net worth.
Enlighten me. I rip on YouTube a lot too, so I could be totally out to lunch. Video Game Dunkey, though, he probably is one of the top YouTubers, isn't he?
Yeah.
Top 100?
According to just a literal Google search, apparently he's around $5 million dollars. So
okay.
I could fund quite a few indie games, I want to say. You know, first of all, you get a couple indie games in, they're pretty successful. That number goes up too. So anyway, we'll keep an eye on this. I'm curious what the first game he publishes is, and I wonder if this announcement's like, okay, get this out of the way, and then like he's already been in the works, talks with someone for a few months, and then there's something that's coming out soon, or if it's like, okay, now that he announced it, now he's gonna start looking for stuff to fund.
Yeah.
So who knows how long this will take before the fruit grows, but we'll keep an eye on it. With that, let's take our last ad break of the show, and then we will come back and talk about cereal cleaners.
Whoop, whoop.
Okay, we are back. Cereal Cleaners, like I said, the latest game in the Dylan Weirdo Indie Corner. This is developed by Draw Distance, I think published by 505 Games. Yeah, that's the one. I guess to give some backstory on this one, because a lot of people maybe have not heard about this game, but I've had it on my radar for, I want to say, a good year at this point. I just like the style of it. It seemed interesting, so I had it on my wish list, and I've kept a closer eye on it since it got a couple trailers. But essentially, in this game, you are playing as a group of serial cleaners, which their job is to go into crime scenes that have already happened and go clean up the mess. You gotta clean up and dispose of bodies. You got to find and remove evidence. You got to vacuum up blood off the ground, things like that. And, you know, usually at like a minute after you go into the level, a bunch of cops will show up. So then it kind of turns into a stealth game as you're doing all that stuff while you're trying to stay away from the cops. And yeah, you can like knock out cops and like move them around and stuff, but it's really not a stealth game in the sense that you're creeping up behind enemies and like choking them out and like hiding their body in a closet. Like, it's not that kind of game. But like I said, you got four characters. Each character has their own set of abilities, strengths, and weaknesses. And yeah, you're just going through a linear story, or not totally linear, but mostly linear, where you're kind of having these different acts, and in each act you pick which of the four characters you want to, whose story you want to play through first, essentially. So you can kind of change up the order of events, but more or less you're gonna have the same stuff going on there. And then yeah, in between that you'll get some story injected in there. But yeah, this game is set in the 90s, and like, it is heavy on the style with like the CRT filters, the coloration, the distortion, the music, all that stuff is very fitting to that time era. So that's a good overall. Would you say that there anything else that I'm missing from just like a top down view of what, how would you describe this game?
Yeah, no, I think you got it. The aesthetic, they really do lay it on thick. Like, it's really got that vibe the whole way through. Every element of the game is stitched together by that old school, you know, rough around the edges, CRT, like you said, feel, heavy film grain, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And even like the characters and the voice acting, I feel like is kind of cheesy, but not too cheesy, but like they know what they're doing with it, kind of thing. Like, it all feels very intentional.
Yeah, you think so? That was maybe my one nitpick, you know, not to go straight to nitpicks, but my nitpick was just that the characters felt a little bit too stereotypical to me.
I think that's totally fair. And one thing that makes it hard to get super invested in the characters is that, you know, there's full voice acting, which for indies is kind of rare, but they, like, their mouths don't move when they're talking, which I think is just purely like a budget thing and like a scope thing, which I think makes it a bit harder to find these characters believable. I think I would agree with you. I almost feel like I'd split it in half, where I feel like Bob and Lottie are quite well done, but then the other two, I think I would agree with you, where they feel a bit more like stereotypical tropes. And a bit more. I like them. I still find them interesting, but I don't think they are, you know, best characters of the year kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, so where I'm at, I think I'm on chapter 4, which I believe there's 5 chapters in the game. And like I said, each chapter pretty much has 4 levels. Then usually there's like a maybe another little quick story vignette or two in each. And those are like pretty short little levels that don't really have any drama in them. It's more just like getting some backstory for the characters. So anyway, I'm on the 4th chapter right now. So I think I'm pretty close to ending the game, and that has taken me about 5 hours of game time. So I think maybe 6 to 8 hours worth of gameplay there, assuming there's no like extra modes or anything. But where are you at? Because we were talking as we were playing yesterday. I don't know if you played any more after our call.
Yeah, I've played a little bit more, and it's nice. The game kind of develops in this natural way where, you know, there aren't a lot of elements of the game. Like, it's fairly straightforward what you need to do. You have one level, you complete the level, you move on to the next one. But I did like that they put in, you know, a lot of effort, I think, to how you move around the level and how you kind of skirt around the cops and that. So yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's not my favorite genre, and like I said to you, it really harkened back to Monaco for me, which is another one of these stealth, you know, heist style games. This isn't a heist game, but it does actually, you know, have basically the same mechanic, except instead of stealing goods, you're lifting dead bodies and throwing them in the back of your car. So
I think for me it's like Hitman light, like it's just like it's a tiny percentage of what Hitman is, but it's like just got a different style and it's focused on different things than that game is, but it's got that same silliness to it, I feel like, where it is, you know, a stealth game and you're dealing with what should be a pretty dark setting, but instead they just played off very playful, where characters are slipping and falling as if they like slip on a banana peel, or you open a door and hit someone and they go like flying back.
Yeah,
like,
you go to chainsaw somebody and it slaps a censored label over their body as you split them apart.
Exactly. Yeah. So I really like that part of it. And I mean, yeah, speaking a bit further on the aesthetics of it, like, I think this game is beautiful. I really like the art style. There's so much detail in these levels. We'll talk about some of the levels specifically a bit later on. But even just like the in-between levels, where you get these just kind of shots of the New York streets and stuff like that, and there's like newspapers popping up and all these weird effects going on.
Right.
But it's like there's such a level of care. Like, they'll even have a joke in there that, like, Viper at one point just makes the joke that she's the queen of something. And so they like drew up, like, you know, her own version of like a Queen of Hearts card or something like that with her art on it. So, like, even just for little jokes like this, they'll go ahead and make some asset just for like this one little moment, and then I'll never see it again.
Yeah, I would, if there's one person to follow out of this game, it would be whoever the art director was. And I haven't looked at it, but yeah, really, you're totally right. They did put a great level of care into that that almost pales the rest of, you know, if you're breaking down the game to its bare components, it really trumps all those other areas. In a great way, and ties the game together. I think without the art, it definitely wouldn't be such a great game. And I would absolutely recommend it, especially to fans of that genre. Or just fans of the art style. I mean, if you take a look, I wrote in my notes here that it's clearly inspired by Basquiat, which, if for art nerds, he's like one of the most popular, you know, dead artists of recent memory. So definitely, if that name rings that name in your ear, you'd probably want to check out Serial Cleaners.
I guess I should have mentioned this at the top, but this game is technically a sequel to a game called Serial Cleaner, where you play as the character of Bob in this game. Yeah, Serial Cleaners. Now there's a team with Bob. I have not played, neither has Cooper. We haven't played that first game. You know, we can't really comment on how it relates to that one, but I think I'm really liking this. I think I will go back and check out that first one at some point. I think it's pretty cheap these days too. It doesn't have that same style to it. It's much more simplistic looking game. And I mean, even you only have one character instead of four. So I feel like gameplay wise, it's probably going to be a step down, but I kind of want to see the roots of this now series, you know, this series of games.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely down to check that out.
And in terms of the gameplay, like, it really feels frantic. And we were playing together a little bit on the weekend, and I said, as you're opening the doors onto cops, it almost feels like you're watching the Three Stooges play out. Like, beating people around a house and running around, and they're chasing you. And yeah, it's totally got that feel to it, almost like a Scooby-Doo, you know, spinoff in a way, like when they're going through the doors trying to chase the guy with the mask. So, yeah, it's fun, it's silly, and the gameplay is actually still quite fun. So, worth playing.
Yeah, and I feel like as a stealth game, it's not super punishing like some games are. It's like, oh, shit, I lost an hour of progress of getting my perfect stealth run. Because if you do get caught by the cops, you just instantly go back to your car and...
I love that.
It usually autosaves anytime you like get rid of a piece of evidence or you get rid of a body, but you can also, a lot of levels will have a save point on the map that's somewhere, so you can go there and, you know, save whatever you've done in between. I really like, because I think that's one of the biggest problems with stealth games sometimes is just either losing a lot of progress or it's just not that fun sometimes to just save scum and like try one interaction 100 times. This game just is so much more free to let you experiment, and even things like the cops, they give up pretty quick. If you keep running and jump through a window, like there's no way they're catching you at that point. Like, you're pretty much home free. But then you might run into another cop who's inside or something like that. So it definitely is chaotic in that way, but it's not punishing that a lot of stealth games are. Moving on to, I'm curious what you think about the sound, but the music and sound effects, just an overall way. What do you think about that? Because obviously the aesthetic we talked about visually is working for us, but does the sound?
Yeah, I was having a lot of fun with that. I really like the music. You mentioned that you found some songs grating, and maybe as I get further in, it'll start to come through for me too. But I thought it really kept the beat well, you know, and had this great pace to it, and kept the game feeling alive, I guess. I was a fan of the music and the sound. I thought they did a good job.
It's very 50-50 for me, where some songs I absolutely love, like the song that plays when you're what is the building that your cleaners are in at the beginning? I forget what they called it.
I don't know what they called it. It's a funeral home. It's a funeral home. It has to be,
like,
right?
A funeral home. Yeah. Like a morgue. Yeah, I guess it's like a morgue, right? A morgue in the basement and all that. The song that plays there, like this kind of light acoustic guitar, like just very beautiful track. And then some of the levels just have some amazing music. But then, yeah, what I was mentioning was that, like, certain songs will just have, like, a very loud and obnoxious, like, drum sound or something. So it's just, like, this annoying-ass snare that I feel like just takes me out of it. Like, man, if I could turn the volume down on, like, this one specific instrument, this song would be great. But there's, like, this one part that's, like, hurting my ears a little bit. But, yeah, it's but other songs are great. So I do feel a bit conflicted on that, where some levels I'm totally vibing. Other ones, I'm like, God, I just want to turn the music off on this level.
Yeah, and that does get annoying if if the music isn't, you know, there for sure. I haven't had that experience myself yet, but now I'll be extra bothered when it happens.
I gotta know if you, well, first of all, did you Tony Hawk game fan? You play those back
that's
in the day?
So funny you mentioned that. I when it was popping up with the little sprays as you're doing Lati, is that her name?
Yeah,
Lati. Doing her intro, I was immediately thinking about Tony Hawk for like my Game Boy back in 2005 or something.
For me, it's when you get caught by the cops, like when they full-on notice you. There's this sound effect that plays that to me just reminded me of, I think it's the sound when you do like a McTwist or like a special trick in Tony Hawk.
And the fact that we both came to this for different reasons
I know, right?
Proves that whoever is on that team absolutely
I feel like I've only spray painted once or twice, so now I gotta like pay attention to that next time I do
it. It's the stickers that pop up too. I don't know. Yeah, there's all these little things in it. Yeah, that totally bring back old Tony Hawk vibes. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that is like an homage thing, or if they just felt like that sound was right, or whatever it was. I'd be curious to find out. I feel like that's something they would do intentionally, because it's not stealing in any way. It's just like similar. It elicits that same kind of emotion for someone who's played those games like for hundreds of hours as a kid.
Yeah.
Moving on, let's talk about the characters a little bit. So I kind of talked about, and I like Bob and Lot Team, the other two I'm not a huge fan of. Is there any character that you like, whether it's the moveset or the, like, you know, the voice acting or the writing of the character?
I mean, this was what I was most critical of, was the narrative and the story. Mm-hmm. And I thought Bob's character really just outshined all of the other in the others in the cast. You know, I did really like Bob. I you know, haven't gotten deep into the story, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on character development through the story or how the plot unfolds, because it really didn't hook me in that way. And that's, again, what I would be most critical of in the game. But I did like Bob. Bob really reminded me of this character from Mr. Robot, who's got this like weird, creepy New York boss man vibe, you know, kind of trapped in the 70s, getting a little bit too old to be wearing gold chains kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I think of when I see Bob. And I like his character, so I'm curious to see how the story goes. But let me hear from you your thoughts on characters and character development.
Yeah, the storytelling is interesting, right? Because you are in this morgue, which I don't know if it's on New Year's or if it's on like Christmas Day, but it's definitely Christmas time. And essentially, yeah, those four characters are bumming around the house, hanging out in the kitchen, or go to the billiard room, whatever it is, just hanging out. And they're essentially just retelling stories of one, like the first chapter, it's like how they all met, or how Bob met each one, and then they kind of brought them all together. And then you kind of go through different events in their life, like big monumental moments in their career as a serial cleaner, I guess you could say. And some of those cross over at some points too. This is something we had talked about when we were playing yesterday, is like, man, it'd be really cool if some of these levels allowed you to have, like, you could switch between the characters. And I will say, so far, I mean, I'm on chapter 4. One level did let me do that, where I could switch between two characters on the fly. So it seems to be very, very specific levels. I'm hoping in the last couple acts here, they do that a lot more, because that's something I really want to play with, is having these different movesets, switching out, because I like that idea, and it kind of is a fun character moment for them too. But anyway, yeah, so the structure is that you're reminiscing on these stories. Each act is like you know, going forward chronologically. And then somewhere sprinkled in there, there's like extra backstory that goes back to like Bob and his relationship with his mother. So you'll get some of that stuff, or you'll go with Lottie, yeah, and you'll find it like, I think it's like her ex-boyfriend. You'll like go to his house and like have some story moment there. So there is some good story stuff infused there that I am quite liking so far. I just like the pacing of it. I feel like it's interesting that you get to kind of choose which character you want to play next. And then you'll just get those little story moments in between. So that part's all working for me so far. I'm really liking it that way.
It sounds like it's really more of a slice of life story then. There's no, you know, big pivots or plot turns. Is that fair to say?
I think so. Like, they're kind of setting up this villain guy that's out to get them. And I mean, slight spoiler here, like that character goes away in a very nonchalant way. And they like even joke about it. He's like, well, I guess that guy's not a threat anymore, that kind of thing. Yeah. So, yeah. I think the slice of life is a good comparison. I hadn't thought about that, but I think that actually is pretty accurate. Mm. Going deeper into like the gameplay perspective, I feel like Bob is your kind of most classic character, where he's got like, you know, a solid strength stat, if you will. Like, he can pick up bodies, but he doesn't really have anything supremely unique. But you also, he's the first character you play as, so you're kind of learning to play the game as him. Then Lottie is the character that is a lot more movement focused. She can vault things. She's got a higher movement speed. She's also got the graffiti, which you can use to distract enemies. Then Viper is kind of the classic hacker character, so she can turn off lights or cameras and things like that. She can also use air ducts, so she can sneak around levels in a different way. And then Psycho is kind of just your big burly dude who has the chainsaw, as you mentioned, which can either break down obstacles, or you can use that to chop up bodies into smaller parts. Right. And he's a lot more of a cutthroat kind of guy. So I like that you have these different play styles. And I think, you know, they force you to switch between each character one at a time, that you're never going to play the same character back to back. So I think the variety is super solid there, just because of the way that's all structured. Is there a character you like the play style of the most, like in the way they build the levels around their movesets?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably Lottie in general, but I don't know if I have a specific favorite. Like, I like the variety, I guess, is my thing. So sure. I wouldn't want to play just one character through the whole game, and I think that element adds a lot to the game as a whole.
Yeah, I wonder if going back to the first game then, how we'd feel about that, you know, knowing that there's only one character. Yeah. I wonder if you unlock more features as him as the game progresses, or if he is just a static character with different levels, which maybe the different levels have different gimmicks, which they do in this game, of course, as well. Speaking on some more of those levels, I feel like there's a great variety there. It's never feeling like they're using the same assets for two levels in a row. You know, you're going from grocery stores to apartments to yachts and police stations and all this stuff. And I really like that, because I love looking at the little details in those levels. Like, each room feels like every object is placed in like a very realistic way, but also works well as a stealth game. So I gotta say, the level design, I think, is the thing that I'm really intrigued by. And I gotta say, it gets better and better as the game goes on. Like, I guess it was Act 3, like every level in there is like the best level I had played in the game, back to back to back, for each character and their moveset. So I think, I'm guessing you're not quite on Act 3 yet, but I think that's, to me, where the game like picked up quite a bit more, where at this point, like, okay, I feel like I'm pretty solid with the movesets. I understand how the game works, the mechanics, and now the levels have gotten a lot more interesting. So
cool.
That's definitely a compliment to the game, and I hope that steers the course for the rest of the game. Any levels that stood out to you that you want to shout out here?
I don't know if I have any levels that have stood out to me yet. Like you say, I'm not on Act 3 yet, and it sounds like that's where the game is going to heat up a bit more. So yeah. I'm excited to get there, and I think it does a good job of kind of easing you into the game without making things too complex right off the bat. Yeah, I do like that you can experiment in how you complete the levels too. Like, there's no structure in terms of do A, then do B, then do Y. You can kind of do it freeform and figure it out as you go. So I like that a lot. Yeah, for you?
Yeah, there's one level that I really wanted to shout out, which is the Rikers mission. So like the prison, Rikers prison in like New York there. This level is super interesting, where, as you would expect, there's like a lot of guards patrolling this prison. And there's just a lot of really fun stuff to do in this level, and I found like there's a lot of good tactics I could implore. One of which being that, you know, one of your sub goals is to let all the prisoners out. There's like three separate, I guess, levers you can pull that open up the gates and let these different prisoners out, which is funny because then like they go out and start attacking the guards. Inevitably, the guards win and like knock them all out, which just adds like extra bodies that you have to deal with. So I think that adds like a good almost like second phase to the level, depending on kind of when you actually go to undo those levers. But then the fun thing with that is if you get your timing super good, you can like knock out a guard, take them into the prison, and then quickly run over and close the lever to like lock them in there. And since you have like three separate layers to this prison, you can do this multiple times. So it took a few tries, but I eventually got to a point where I had locked up like most of the guards in the level. I had knocked out a couple other ones and hid them in like some boxes. So I had like mostly free reign of the level, not 100%. It was enough too that like when a guard sees you, sometimes they'll, if they've seen you for long enough, like they keep eye of contact for a while, they'll like call into their buddies to come get you. So like when I was running around, like the guys in the cages can still see me. So eventually they would like, you know, call it in, then I have to fight another couple guys. So it was never just a cakewalk, but it was enough that I felt like I kind of had a clever solution to this level. There's also just a lot of fun shortcuts. You're playing as Psycho in this level, so you're kind of like using your chainsaw to bust through different entrances and stuff like that. So that was really fun. And then the fun thing, so we talked about this when we were playing, which is that sometimes, you know, in most levels you have your car that's outside the building that you're serial cleaning, and you just have to, you know, bring a lot of bodies back or bring some evidence back. And it can be a bit tedious at times because you're just oftentimes doing a lot of the same walking part, or like maybe once you get the body outside, there's no guards anymore. So it's just like, okay, I got to spend another 20 seconds here to actually drag this body the whole way. It can be a bit tedious. But in this level, because like the outside of it has like all these prison fences, I had found this certain area where I could chop up all the bodies and just throw the limbs like over three separate fences, and they would land like right near the exit. So I could throw all of them, just a pile of limbs everywhere. And then I could go one by one and just quickly pick them up and drop them in. And then at one point too, another cop saw that I was doing this. So he ran over to those body parts to see what was going on, and then I just sniped him across the map, hit him with a limb,
whipped a like limb right at like his head,
these multiple fences, knocked him out. It was so good. So like that level has definitely been my highlight so far. There's just so many fun things to play with, and it used all those mechanics.
And, and I do that strategy too, and it's, I think we need to talk about that a little bit, just how comically stupid the police officers are. Like, I don't know if this is trying to do a social commentary on police. I just saw this movie Vengeance recently. Have you heard of this one?
No, I don't think I have.
BJ Novak, he wrote and directed it. It's really good. Okay. And I think one thing that it centers on is just cops not wanting to do their jobs. And that's the, like, suspending my disbelief in the game, the way I can justify the fact that they see that this body that was just laying there is now you know, actually zipped up in a body bag, and then B, 2 minutes later, it's moved like 20 feet away from the site, and then C, now the blood is all gone, and just ignore it all. You know, it feels a little bit contrived. So yeah. And that's how I kind of justify it, is just thinking about that. But I like that strategy. Just, you got to just shuffle them all at the same time. I work from the back to the front. So I get whatever's farthest away, whip it towards the front, and then just, bring everything all at once if I can.
I mean, I think the cop thing, that was actually like a big con for me when I was first playing the game. Like, I feel it took me a good few levels before I was able to click with the game, because I was like, man, this is just so unrealistic. And like, these are the dumbest guards I've ever seen. I feel like it's hard to find it believable, but eventually I just kind of got over that. And I think it, you know, it obviously is for the good of the gameplay to make that decision, even if narratively you have to have some disbelief there. I definitely see where you're coming from, because that definitely bothered me for
The game definitely favors fun over realism, and that's probably to its advantage.
And I mean, I feel like the enemy, in terms of like enemy variety, there really isn't any, you know, like the guards, whether you're in a prison or if they're just regular cops on the street, like they might have a different costume or something, but they're pretty much always the same. And then, you know, there's some other levels that do interesting things where There is a level that you're playing as the hacker character Viper, where you don't have to remove like any bodies. It's really just about going into this place, hacking different terminals, using the terminals to like find the evidence. And then there's a lot of cameras in the level, so you can like turn off cameras and sneaking around and stuff like that. So I really like that because it's just, okay, a little bit of variety here. I don't have to clean up any bodies or, you know, vacuum up any blood. I can just focus on some other mechanics here. And there's another level too where your character's almost like kind of tripping out. So the guards will kind of teleport in and out of existence, right? Because he's almost like envisioning that they're there rather than them actually being there. And so that added a good layer on there as well. So I wanted to shout that out, that yeah, as the game goes on, like the levels get more and more interesting as the game, I feel like, gets more and more comfortable with letting the player, like, they understand that you've gotten a lot better at the game at that point, so they can throw some more wild things at you and know that you, yeah, you'll be able to deal
you'll
with
figure
it.
Your way through it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I got to say, like, to the mechanic of using your vacuum to clean up blood, I think it's just such a fun...
It's a wet dry vac.
Yeah, it's a fun twist on this kind of game because, it like, I'm trying to think of an example of a game that does, like, has mechanics like that where you're going to, like, mop things up or clean things up. But I don't know, it works really well here because obviously your vacuum, like, is loud, so that naturally connects with the stealth system and that you got to be careful of when you're using it. It's just also sort of fun to like whip the vacuum around. You can also like slide on blood, which is fun. So that adds an element of like, okay, maybe I want to leave this blood here as long as possible so that by the time I need to like, or use, you know, I'll leave it here for the time being so I can sneak past this area very quickly. But then when I'm finally done with this zone, I can go clean up that blood at that point.
Mm.
And you know, I think it's a great decision that you don't have to clean up all the blood once again. It's not really that logical. You know, you should probably have to clean all of it up for the sake of not leaving any evidence. You do get an achievement, though, if you do like get 100% of the blood on the level. So they had a little connection to that. But
I was wondering.
Yeah. Only making it so you need to get rid of like, you know, 80% of the blood, I think, is makes it so it's not just this annoying mini game of like, oh, there's a tiny little splotch I left in this one room and I can't find it. Well, now you just, it doesn't matter. Just get the big swaths and you're good to go. So that works really well for me, I think. Trying to think, I think that's most of my notes on this game. I'm really enjoying it so far. I'm definitely gonna play it till the end. Like I said, I probably will even go back and play the first game in the series, but for just being a silly stealth game with some fun, fresh new mechanics with a great aesthetic, like it's totally working for me. And I like having a stealth game that isn't based around sneaking up and killing enemies and like hiding them in boxes and stuff. I mean, I like doing that in games, but I like that this can take that genre and do something very different with it. There is still bodies involved, but it's just a much different way that you're interacting with them. So I think that's really cool. But yeah, anything else that you want to mention about this one?
Yeah, no, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head, and I'm going to enjoy it just from the perspective of like nostalgia or this like beautiful art and aesthetic, which really carries through so far, and I'm sure will right through to the end. So there's a lot to appreciate about the game, and you know, any one of those things is enough to draw somebody in, I think.
Yeah. Well, the studio's name is Draw Distance, so that makes sense. You know, drawing in there.
Wow. Not intentional.
Yeah. There you go. There is another episode of SideQuest. Koop, this is a lot of fun. I feel like it was a lot of more low-key topics today, but it was still fun nonetheless. Thanks for joining me. I think we had plans to do another episode in October when the Steam, what is it called? Steam Next Fest, Games Festival, whatever they call it.
Next anyway, Fest, yeah, I think that's the name of it.
Yeah.
I hope.
That sounds about right. Where they just do a bunch of different demos temporarily available on Steam. So I think our plan was to check out a bunch of those and then come back here on SideQuest and share our experiences. And
yes, sir.
Talk about some of the other games we've been playing and all that. So that'll be fun. That'll be sometime in October. But yeah, it was great to have you here on Lucky Number 3 episode of yours. And thank you everyone for listening once again. Join that Patreon to get next week's episode nice and early this week. If not, we'll see you next Tuesday for Plague Tale Innocence. That will be all for today. Have a good day, everyone. See ya.
Bye.